You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky joined today by Jacob Rude. He's a writer at Silver Screen and Roll, does great work over there. He's also the new host of Locked On Hoosiers on the network. So welcome to the network. We're kind of new, too.
But not as new as you, Jacob. So get ready for 30 to 40 minutes of hazing.
That's right.
Just hazing the new guy.
I'm the rookie around here. I'm the rookie on the site.
I don't
need to wear any pink backpacks.
Go get us some in and out there.
That's
new
right.
guy.
You're on my shoulder.
There is no in and out anywhere around here, so I won't be able to do that one. Sorry, guys.
The longer you spend not getting your in and out, the longer we're waiting for that in and out, Jacob. Figure it out, Rook.
I'll wear a pink backpack during the episode just to make up for it.
Much appreciated. Lots we want to get into today. Obviously, Jacob doing some great work at Silver Screen and Roll in terms of getting everybody ready for the season and breaking down all the moves that they've been making. The Lakers have been talk a little bit of lineup stuff. See Jacob's opinions on some of the stuff we covered in Thursday's show about closing lineups, starting lineups, and things like that. One of the big reasons, though, that we wanted Jacob on, other than doing great work at Silver Screen and Roll, is that through truly, I think, pandemic circumstances and the randomness of the internet age, you covered Malik Monk last year while he played with the Hornets. Mm-hmm. And Andy and I have talked about this a ton. Like, I need a Malik Monk explainer. Like, I need somebody to kind of give me an idea of what's going on here with him. And so nobody better than you to do it, because not only can you talk about Monk, you can talk about how he fits in with the Lakers and all this other stuff. All right, so let's get into Monk here, because Lakers fans were very excited. It makes a lot of sense. Like, 23 years old, one of the only young players they have, coming off of his best season last season, shot 41% or 40% from 3-point range. Easily his best percentage as a pro. The year before that, he was at 28%. You get a guy like this for the minimum. There's zero downside, but I'm still suspicious. There's a scenario for me, at least, Jacob, where, he gets squeezed for playing time. I am not sold that this is going to be as impactful as maybe some people are.
Including Malik Monk.
Yeah. How good was he last year? Like, what happened last year?
It was a really interesting story, because he didn't start out the year even in the rotation, let alone playing well immediately. Back in 2020, at the end of, or in February, when the Hornets season would eventually come to an end, he was suspended for violating the anti-drug program. So he went into the pandemic suspended, and then the Hornets season never restarted. So he was kind of in the doghouse already, and then training camp, he gets COVID. So he was way behind the eight ball to start the season. Through the first about, 15, 17 games, he only played three times. At a certain point, it was a little odd. People were kind of starting to ask questions, because Malik looked healthy, but he couldn't get his way into the rotation. He finally played a game, and they made him available really for one of the first times afterwards on the Zoom. And he was honest. He talked about how neither him or Borrego, head coach James Borrego, would say it directly, but there was some type of tension there. And they both kind of alluded to it and said that they had moved past it. They'd worked it out. And shortly after that, he entered the rotation and then, as you said, proceeded to play the best basketball of his career. It was four games after he entered the rotation. He had the best game of his career against Miami. hit 9 three-pointers and help the Hornets win in Miami.
Yeah, 36 points. It was sort of the beginning of what was a, you know, really solid February. You know, 36 in one game, 23 in another, double digits, you know, 20, 29, 25, 21, 19, 18 in one stretch. I mean, like, he put up big, pretty big numbers in that month.
Yeah, and things really started to click for him. He as much as he talked about what was working off the court, on the court, he talked about what was working off the court and that he had kind of grown up and realized he couldn't take things the coach did personal anymore. I think that's one of the biggest things why I think last year was kind of a starting block more than a like a aberration or a flash in the pan or whatever you want to call it, is he talked a lot about kind of changes off the court and his approach to the game. And why that led to some of his success on the court. He talked about how much work he'd put in. That hadn't changed, but he'd said he wasn't taking decisions the coach made personally anymore. He said before if he wasn't – I mean, he used very colorful language to describe how he felt when he wasn't in the rotation at the beginning of the season. And he said he had to realize that that wasn't something personal, that that was coach trying to win. And he said, his exact quote was, if you take it personal, you're going to mess yourself up and not be ready when your time's called. So he had actually to kind of stay ready and stay focused on the game. He started kind of mentoring LaMelo and talking to him about what he saw on the court and things like that. And then once he finally eventually got back into the rotation, that's why he was able to almost immediately start playing well and playing that incredible basketball in February and into March as well.
Real quick, before I know we're going to start breaking down some of the specifics with Malik Monk's, you know, his strengths, weaknesses, what he does as a scorer. But with everything you just talked about, Jacob, in terms of the ride that he went on and sort of the full circle attitudinal change, you know, the mentoring with LaMelo, how surprised were you, if at all, that it seemed like Charlotte didn't make much of an effort to retain him, considering still young was one of their lottery picks?
I still wasn't too surprised. There was still some writing on the wall. As much as Malik and Borrego said that they'd kind of moved past things, it felt like something always kind of lingered there as well. And then in the exit interviews, Malik talked a lot about wanting to be valued at his wherever he was signed with next. And he just kind of gave some poignant comments that certainly made it seem like he wasn't all that interested in returning to Charlotte. And I mean, on top of that, they were loaded at the guard position. When they didn't extend him the qualifying offer, they still had LaMelo, Rozier, and Devontae Graham was still a restricted free agent. So I wasn't surprised that he didn't come back. I was surprised that they didn't even extend a qualifying offer. I thought that somebody was just going to have to give Malik a bigger contract and they wouldn't match it. That was the only surprising part for me. But as the year kind of went on, even as much as I said, as they said that they were kind of past whatever happened, nobody ever really talked about whatever happened. There was some kind of disagreement between the two of them. It still festered. And at the end of the year, Malik didn't really make any qualms about he wanted to be valued somewhere and certainly made it seem like he didn't feel that way in Charlotte.
All right. So we, like Andy said, we want to get into some of the skill set stuff, talking a little bit about how he potentially fits into the Lakers rotation. Like, again, 23-year-old kid on a minimum level contract. It's a no-lose situation for the Lakers, but I want to find out how they win with it. We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Sweatblock. There are a few things in life that just aren't fun to talk about, and one of them is excessive sweating. Like, that is not really a fun conversation. Hey, look at me sweating through my shirt. You don't want to worry about that. And that's why I use Sweatblock antiperspirant wipes. They're stronger, more effective than most clinical antiperspirants. You just apply it at night before bedtime. Next morning, you wake up, wash, go about your day without having to worry about sweat. Use it once or twice a week. Stay dry the whole time. Guaranteed or your money back. No more pit stains. No more picking shirts based on which ones will hide the sweat better. You can go to whatever party you want without having to worry about those pit stains. Use your best pickup lines.
Andy just totally gave up on shirts. Just, you know, went shirtless. Exactly.
Well, no, I want to use my best move, and this is my best move.
Especially when you're listening.
Let me just put it to you this way. If you know another sweat solution that is doctor-created, doctor-recommended, featured on Rachel Ray's show, and tested by firefighters, I'm listening. But until then, check out Sweatblock. Get it today for 20% off at sweatblock.com with the promo code LOCKEDON or at Amazon or CVS.
Locked On Lakers also brought to you by Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season, it's in full swing. You can track all the action at Bet Online. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including baseball. The football is coming. Indiana sports are coming. You're going to want to gamble on that and listen to Jacob's podcast to learn how to do it effectively. UFC, MMA. Before the next pitch, head over to Bet Online on your laptop or your mobile device. Check out everything you need, sign up bonuses, contest information, 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit if you use the promo code Locked On. Again, 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code Locked On. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. So, Jacob, Malik Monk, just from a shooting standpoint, obviously part of the things, you know, one of the massive priorities for the Lakers in this offseason was to find shooting, particularly once they got Westbrook. The need for shooting grew even more acute. One of the things people are excited about with Monk was the 40% three-point shooting from last year. But the year before, as I mentioned, 28%. The year before that, 33%. The year before that, 34%. So at least on its face, 40% looks like the outlier. When you look at both the shooting and sort of the broader skill set, what do you think explained the improvement there? And then what else does he do on the floor that accounts for better offensive metrics all across the board, you know, highest offensive rating, all that kind of stuff that he put up last year?
Well, the kind of glass half full take is that he finally played on a competitive team where he wasn't the main focus a lot of times. There were a lot of times he played with LaMelo. Gordon Hayward was out there. Terry Rozier had a career year. He was the focus of a lot of the defense's attention. So in that regard, he was able to not have as much attention on him the last season. There's certainly a case to be made that for the majority of his career, he's a poor three-point shooter, aside from what was basically a 30-game stretch last season when he was red hot. Now, for all the reasons we talked about last segment off the court, I think there was a change in just kind of how he approached the game that generally leads to more consistent results into the future. So he was able to play next to, I mean, really all four of Charlotte's guards were able to play with each other. They were all good ball handlers, good shooters, were able to create for themselves. Malik is probably the one that could create for others the least, but I don't think that's really going to be his role anyway on the Lakers, so I don't know that that matters too much. But the thing that kind of separates him from guards that the Lakers had last year is his ability to create for himself. He's able to break a guy down and either knock down a pull-up three-pointer off the dribble or kind of get into the lane. He's not the best at finishing around the lane, and he's certainly not going to really ever look to pass the ball at that point. But, I mean, there's still value in having a guy who is able to create a basket whenever the offense isn't working and things like that. So those were certainly his biggest strengths. He obviously also had a lot of spot-up and catch-and-shoot opportunities playing alongside LaMelo and Hayward and those guys last season as well, and he was really good as a catch and shoot three-point shooter as well, which I would imagine is going to be the situation he finds himself in most with the Lakers this year.
Yeah, I wanted to specifically ask when it comes to some of those catch and shoots and you know different looks, how he is working in transition, you know, getting hit ahead passes, stuff like that, because I'm sure he saw some of that with LaMelo and on a team with LeBron and Russell Westbrook. You know, you're looking to run, but, you know, working off the move specifically like that could be a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, that Charlotte team got out and ran last year with LaMelo. As every Lakers fan saw with Lonzo, as soon as he gets the ball, he wants to get it up the court as quick as possible. So he was in transition a lot. He hilariously, one of his nicknames, if you guys haven't seen, is the God of Dunk. Malik Monk, the God of Dunk.
And Eric Holliday,
that is actually I'm looking my right nickname. Now.
Yeah, that is my nickname.
It's he's the God of Dunk too.
It's on his basketball reference page. You're right. I did not know that.
That is an Eric Collins special for those of you that watch the Hornets games and listen to him. He is the one who came up with that, but in high school and in college and early on in the NBA, he was known for his athleticism and his jumping ability. So he kind of has that level of athleticism, but he's obviously more become a shooter. But he was good in transition. It's an area he's familiar with. He can either kind of handle the ball in transition. He can fill the wing. He can spot up from three. It's a whole lot of situations. He was with LaMelo. The Hornets teams didn't necessarily always play fast, but whenever they led the league in fast break points before LaMelo got injured. So it was a team that kind of picked and choosed when it got out, but as soon as they did, they were really good in transition. So I think this Lakers team is going to be crazy good in transition. They have so many pieces that are going to be really good in it, and Malik would fit that to a T, really.
The other thing that I think is going to be determinative of how much he actually plays is obviously defense. Andy, I know we've talked about it. Like, the expectation is, I think that there's going to be some slip that they've traded some defense for offense, which is a perfectly good thing to do with this team. Probably something they needed to do.
You're going to tell Frank Vogel to work his magic.
Yes. Malik Monk set a career best for offensive rating last year. He also set a career worst for defensive rating. If you look at some of his numbers on cleaning the glass, for example, and they're not good. Is he as bad as his numbers suggest? Is there something to work with
is
here?
Is he worse than his numbers suggest?
Yes, well, I mean, that's true. He could be worse. Maybe they were protecting him.
Wow, they're that good.
Yeah, what's the deal?
They certainly weren't protecting him. That number is pretty indicative of his defensive impact was like. He is a decent enough team defender, but if he's in any kind of like one-on-one situations, he's just not good. And that was part of the reason he didn't get as many minutes at times with Charlotte, because Borrego was a guy who wanted to kind of anchor the defense a lot and then build from there, especially later in the season. They really started kind of bleeding points, and he was adjusting his rotation to try to not give up as many points toward the end of the year. So that a lot of times when he wasn't playing, it was because he was struggling defensively. It also, I mean, just to touch on the offensive stuff, if his shot isn't falling, he really struggles offensively as well. Naturally, as I said, he doesn't really create for others. But it really – he went down with injury almost the same time LaMelo did last season. They came back together on the same night. I don't know – the Hornets were really reeling at that point, and I don't know if they necessarily rushed those two back, but neither of them looked right at the end of the year. And so it's hard to take away about the final 10 games of the year. Malik and LaMelo really did not look good. Mm-hmm. But at that, in those same, in that same span, I mean, Malik wasn't getting nearly as many minutes, and it seemed like defense was the reason. Because late in the year, like I said, they were adjusting the rotation to try to shore up the defense. And, I mean, really nothing was working for the Hornets. They lost their last five games of the regular season and then got walloped in that.
That's when I tuned out. I just stopped paying attention.
Yeah, and then they got walloped in that that play-in game. So it was a tough ending to the year. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, team defense and just kind of being in the right place generally, he's fine, but he's not ever going to be someone that is going to make any kind of spectacular defensive play. In a lot of ways, one of the names I've kind of thought as a comparison for him is a younger version of J.R. Smith before he got to the Cavs, really, when he was
shirtless?
Just like, yeah, well, Malik
go
is
on.
A fair amount. So
you have my attention, young J.R. Smith, carry on.
Yeah, he because J.R. when he was younger was known more as an athlete than he was as a shooter. And eventually kind of developed that part of his game. And
he and Birdman infamously screwed up each other's dunk contests working as partners. It's one of the greatest dunk contest appearances ever. You can find it on YouTube. It is amazing. The two of them, I think they were New Orleans teammates at the time. Were. This was spectacular.
Yeah. So obviously no comparison is direct or exact or anything, but we saw once JR got to Cleveland and his role was just more confined to be a shooter, be focused on that, the impact he had on Cleveland. I'm not saying that LeBron is some kind of magic worker and that Malik is suddenly going to become the Cavs version of JR Smith, but I mean there are some parallels there with how they kind of came up, what they were when they were younger, and then how they eventually became known for their shooting more than anything. So that would be if you're looking for kind of a role that Malik could potentially play with the Lakers, it would be something like that where he's going to be a shooter. JR wasn't really a good defender. He was bigger, I think, than Malik, and that was able to keep him on the court. But shooting in offense is where Malik is going to find his minutes on this team.
Is Malik a suit man?
JR is JR 6'6". Malik is 6'3". So yeah, that's the difference between the two of them. Also, great side note before we break here, the story of JR Smith enrolling at North Carolina A&T is in of itself awesome because like that's cool that he wants to go back and get his degree. He obviously went straight from high school to the NBA. That he's wants to join the golf team is arguably the best story in sports ever. So I'm excited about that. But you started to allude to fit and where he's going to play. And this gets to some of the lineup questions that Andy and I were talking about in Thursday's episode, because I do think there's a chance that Monk plays a ton and has a huge role on this team. I also think there's a chance he gets buried in that rotation at shooting guard. So we'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bars ever. Bars covered in 100% chocolate. They are soft. They are easy to chew. Not like the ones that are just like an absolute chore that require a chainsaw and a forklift. And they're just, it's a mess. They're deadbeats. You don't want a part of those. But Built Bars, they're healthy. They're great for health conscious people. Whether you're trying to lose or maintain weight, indulging in a great taste and treat, low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Awesome for the keto folks. And they taste better than ever. You got the 12 original flavors like raspberry, coconut, almond, salted caramel, banana bread, new flavors like cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, cookies and cream, great taste combinations. You will never feel bored eating the same thing over and over with Built Bar. So go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15. You get 15% off your first order. Again, promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at builtbar.com.
How much do you think he plays? Jacob, when you start to break down, he's not 6'6". It's a little harder to throw him out, like a third guard, however you want to do it. You've got Bazemore, you've got Wayne Ellington, who has a very specific skill set and is more likely to be a consistent shooter, I think, than Monk is. I think we could generally agree with that, although Monk is a more dynamic offensive player. THT is going to play some two. How much playing time do you think there is ultimately for Monk, and what determines that?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting with this shooting guard position because there's a ton of names you could throw out to play there, and somebody's going to be kind of the odd man out. Right now, I tend to think that maybe it's Ellington who, he's a really good three-point shooter. and that will be a valuable skill. But like you said, Monk is able to do kind of more things offensively, at least when it comes to scoring, which I think will be more valuable. I think Monk is best used as a sixth man. And that was the role he played when the Hornets were really rolling last year. Once LaMelo was in the starting lineup, Monk and Miles Bridges were the two guys off the bench first, right away for the Hornets. And he embraced that role and excelled in that role, as we talked about. So I could see him pretty easily being that sixth man type of guard. He has enough ball handling that it could work there as well, depending on who he's out there playing with. But I would be surprised if Malik started. Like I said, if his shot isn't falling, at least last season, things didn't go well for him. He certainly didn't stop shooting. He had the Kobe mentality of going 2-for-20 versus 0-of-8 or whatever that quote was about Deron Williams. So he certainly never stopped shooting, but there wasn't much he did otherwise. If the shot wasn't falling, he's not going to be creating open looks for teammates or throwing these wild right. passes. He doesn't really rebound too much. So his playing time is going to be pretty much dictated on whether his shot's going in or not.
That's really interesting to me, Jacob, just when you take into account the entirety of his decision and the idea of not just taking a veteran's minimum, because I think even coming off all the stuff he talked about with him in Charlotte, his market value is higher than veteran's minimum. To go that route on a team this loaded in extreme win now mode, like in an effort to resuscitate your career and, you know, resuscitate your image. On one hand, if it hits, it's going to hit hard.
It's a huge bet, yeah.
But on the other hand, there's a lot of ways that you could really just take a financial cut while burying yourself. Like, this is a really risky move that he made.
I was really surprised that the Lakers signed him and that it was for the veterans minimum. I thought the kind of bare minimum he was going to take would be the taxpayer mid-level exception. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so when it came out, it was a minimum deal. I was stunned. There, in kind of listening, watching his intro press conference, I know he talked about wanting to play with more experienced teammates, which you're not going to find more experience than this Lakers team this year, I can't imagine. In Charlotte, honestly, he was one of the older guys on the team. They did not have any type of experience. Bismack Biyombo was 28 and was the veteran of the team by far. Hayward was 30, and that Hayward was the oldest player on the team. They had a ton of young guys. And, I mean, for better or for worse, when it was going really well, the Hornets looked a lot of fun. They got all the way up to the 4 seed. They looked like a legitimate playoff team. And then when it was going poorly at the end of the year, the wheels fell off and they never were able to get it right. So I could understand him wanting to play with some more veterans in more of a win now scenario. But yeah, as you guys said, this is a huge gamble for him because it's not even certain that he's going to get playing time. Like we said, somebody's going to be the odd man out in that shooting guard position. And if it doesn't work this year for him, like now you're probably on a string of veterans minimum one-year deals until you're able
maybe,
to prove
maybe
yourself.
Somebody gives them a taxpayer or something or part of their mid-level.
Well, you're already starting to look overseas. I mean,
you get on
not to get too dramatic about it, but yes.
That maybe, but like you're on that treadmill. Is the point is you start to get on that treadmill of one-year deals, make good deals, and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I meant quickly to clarify, overseas just for the paydays. He'll make more money overseas.
Yeah, I was just gonna say real quick, like he's still, if he's able to recreate what he did in those 30 games, not even get all the way there, but if he's able to do what he did in those 30 games for the Lakers this year, it's certainly not going to be a problem. But as I said, you're basically taking a 30 game sample size out of the 230 he's played. So I mean, there's reason for concern, I should say, about what he's going to be able to do this season.
While we have you, because all these questions are related, we spent Thursday's episode talking a ton about lineups, starting, finishing, and you know, who, what happens in between. I think, you know, Dwight Howard as backup five, whether it's AD starting or Marc Gasol starting, that's a pretty easy one to pencil in. Kendrick Nunn comes in and relieves Russell Westbrook, maybe sometimes plays with him too, but you know, that's a pretty linear thing. What do you see though as the probable starting lineup for the Lakers? And then we'll ask you too about who you think finishes games.
Yeah, I would imagine the starting lineup, you're looking at Russ. I mean, obviously Russ, LeBron, and AD. And then I would imagine Marc Gasol starts at the five. And then I would probably lean towards Bazemore just because of he's the best defender of those shooting guards. And that I would imagine that's what Vogel's going to lean on more than anything. That's what he's known for. So I would say Bazemore is probably the starting shooting guard.
Yeah, that was the exact lineup I think both of us had yesterday. Brian had toyed with the idea a little bit of Ellington in there for Bazemore, just gravity reasons. But I tend to think unless Bazemore's shot just is not falling at all, you need him out there for some type of defensive structure.
Yeah, I think he gets first crack at it. I just think that there's a difference. Bazemore doesn't have gravity. Like Bazemore does not. The teams are, especially given the other options around there, your choices are letting LeBron get to the hoop or letting Kent Bazemore take three-pointers. You're going to let Baze take threes. Ellington, on the other hand, defenses just have that instinct of protection. Like it's like Danny Green. Even when he wasn't hitting threes, players go defend Danny Green at the three-point line. That's just it's built into their thinking. Ellington gets that kind of respect. So I think he just opens up more space. I could see that working if they can hold up well enough defensively. But yeah, I agree with you guys. I think Bazemore ends up getting that first crack. Obviously a lot to happen in between there. What about finishing lineups?
AD is certainly going to be the five and LeBron the four. Outside of Russ, I could see this being a lot like Vogel has done before and almost just playing the hot hand. Mm-hmm. I'd be surprised if Bazemore wasn't included in that because he'll probably have the ability to defend guards and maybe some of the smaller wings as well. And then it's probably some one of like Malik, if he's hot, Kendrick Nunn, maybe Wayne Ellington. I mean, maybe at times it's somebody like Melo as well and keep LeBron as like a three. I'd imagine you're probably going to go for more shooting there to keep the floor space. But I would say that there's probably not any real nailed on closing lineup other than those three. And they just kind of play the hot hand as he's done. I mean, there might be times when Dwight's the guy that finishes.
I mean, I was going to say a lot of this could be situational. I mean, you're going to have a different lineup if you are looking to get into the game from down five versus protecting a 5-point lead versus it's all tied up, that sort of thing. But, you know, I mean, I do think, though, that Vogel, for the most part, had his ideal closers in mind and then would build or mix and match off that depending on the specific scenario. But for the most part, you had LeBron, AD, KCP, Caruso, and then pick a fifth. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, things might change a little bit based on matchups or the scenarios. But for the most part, I think Vogel knew who he wanted to close with and then would just, it was more a matter of, was he allowed to go with it?
Yeah. How much do you think he's going to compromise some of those sort of defensive instincts this year, especially when it comes to kind of those closing lineups, Jacob? Because that's where a lot of this comes into play. Like, ideally, Bazemore hits 42% of his threes. He's the guy who is hitting threes and also can play defense, but you may not get that option. Like, that would be a little out of character for him too. So how against the grain do you think Vogel's gonna have to be this year with just his own wiring?
Seems like the Lakers are challenging him to see to go against his grain with this roster. I still default to the idea that he's always gonna pick defense first just because that's who he's been. Now the Lakers have just given him very few defenders, so maybe that's the compromise. That I think a guy like Bazemore, The fact he turned down more money at Golden State to come to the Lakers makes me believe that there were some promises or assurances made that he would get a lot of playing time. And so
I also think they need to play him a lot. I think part of the reason he's going to get some playing time is they actually need him on the floor.
But just don't tell the promises thing to Anthony. He's not going to like that.
Yeah. We'll keep that under wraps. But I certainly think when it comes down to it, he's probably going to default to defending. But the other thing is, like, all jokes aside, there just aren't a lot of defenders in that backcourt. Unless Talen, you put him out there with the Bazemore and Russ. But, man, you're really limiting the spacing then. So almost by default, he's not going to be able to have as much defense as those Lakers teams had last year. Those four names you mentioned, KCP, Caruso, LeBron, and AD, are all plus defenders. You're not going to have that this season. So I guess by default almost that Vogel isn't going to be able to play the level of defense at least he has. So it'll be interesting to see if he tries to make the best of the defenders he has or if he just pivots all the way and say, we're going to outscore you and we're going to
– Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah. I don't imagine he'll do that.
WWE.
Yeah, I don't imagine he's going to do that, but it'd be a lot of fun to just throw out as many shooters as you can around LeBron and Russ and see how many points you can score.
As somebody who absolutely detested watching the NBA in the 90s and is here for your 152 to 148 games, I will watch 82. I'd much rather watch 82 games of that. All right, Jacob, this is incredibly useful because as excited as Lakers fans are about Malik Monk and what he's going to do here, nobody actually has seen him play. Like nobody. No Laker fan has watched Malik Monk at all. And if you say you did, you're lying. So I appreciate this at the very least.
He's a lot of fun. Lakers fans are going to love him. He's, any kind of microwave scorer like that's always going to be a fan favorite. And then he's just a really honest person and a really easy person to root for. So I think Laker fans are going to love him.
Cool. He certainly, I think, did well in his introductory press conference, talking about wanting to learn, talking about wanting to make himself better, and like we said, making that huge bet on himself. Jacob Rude, check out all of his stuff all year long at Silver Screen and Roll, a big addition to the staff over there that's going to make that site even better. So congratulations on that. Congratulations on Locked on Hoosiers. We are colleagues. I didn't even realize that when we reached out. We are colleagues. We'll see you at the next barbecue. And we'll all do the secret handshake. Authentic Indianan. Thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate it. This is fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.
All right, everybody have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.